Thank you. Well, it is more than just a little ironic that this sermon falls just now, because yesterday was the beginning of the 30 Days of Love, sponsored jointly by the UUA and the Standing on the Side of Love campaign. That's ironic because I have to start with a confession. For much of my life, I was a huge skeptic about love. I would brashly say, I don't believe in love. Now, when people gave me the inevitable puzzled or disapproving looks, after all, a minister is supposed to believe in love, if anyone is, I would just repeat myself more forcefully, I don't believe in love. Now, when I look back at that younger, bolder, brasher me, I'm pretty sure that I did believe in love. I just didn't believe in the kind of love that is paraded through our culture as some kind of crazy romantic ideal. You know, the love that is used to sell diamonds and cars and wine and deodorant and toothpaste and, well, almost everything. That love that isn't really love, but is a kind of hunger for something to fill those places of emptiness and pain. It isn't that I don't believe romantic love exists. Of course, I've seen and I've felt that kind of connection, that rush of chemistry, the way your heart beats, thinking fast, so I can't even talk about it, of that one special person, and that day-to-day wonder and work of commitment. I do believe in that love, but I don't believe in the kind of adoration or idolatry, really, that it seems to have become in our culture. My colleague in Washington, D.C., Reverend Rob Hardies, who is the senior minister at All Souls, calls that kind of love, love as good feeling. There's nothing wrong with love as good feeling. It inspires and brings energy and excitement to our lives. But it's not really enough to preach about. It isn't enough to be at the center of our lives and our communities. I guess it's my nature, being the kind of person who's drawn to ministry, after all, to long for something more than just love as a good feeling. Something more like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. described when he said, love is the only cement that can hold this broken community together. When I'm commanded to love, I'm commanded to restore community, to resist injustice, and to meet the needs of my brothers, and I would add sisters, siblings, cousins, neighbors to the list. I think Reverend Hardies also had a similar definition of love. He says, love will take us to a place beyond where it feels good to love. It will take us to a place where we can't rely anymore on an outburst of compassion or a good, sweet feeling or the kind of falling in love that we feel when we first meet our loved one. He says, if steadfast love endures forever, steadfast love has to be something more than a feeling. It's got to be something that takes discipline, cultivation, that takes practice, really. That's the kind of love that religion calls us to, that faith calls us to. We need to get it out of our heads that love as a good feeling is strong enough to respond to the hurt and the need in this world. We all know from our experience that we are called to to love when it doesn't feel so good. We're called to love when it feels lousy. We're called to love when it feels like a duty, not a joy, and even when it's painful. And that love, for us to do that work, we need to be sustained by a community that teaches us how to learn to love better. Now that is a love I am drawn to believe in. Love that takes discipline, cultivation, and practice. Love that calls us to care for the world even when it feels hard or exhausting or confusing or even impossible. Love that is created in and sustained by community, especially communities like the ones that Reverend Alice Blair Wesley described in the reading that I read to you. Communities where love is a source of energy and inspiration, coupled with reflection on what is required of us by that love, and resolve to let love move us into action. The point of the 30 Days of Love campaign is to get every person in every Unitarian Universalist congregation for 30 days to make a commitment to be love in the world. If only for a moment, once a day, one little effort to be love in the world. Alice Walker wrote a book called Anything We Love Can Be Saved. Here's what she said. She said, love and justice and truth are the only monuments that generate ever-widening circles of energy and life. Love and justice and truth are the only monuments that endure, though trashed and trampled generation after generation. We can say with conviction to our children, anything we truly love can be saved. First in their own hearts, and then in the hearts of others, and then in the world. They only have to make their love inseparable from their belief, and both of those inseparable from hard work. Anything we love can be saved. Learning to love, not just as a feeling, but love in action for everyone that we encounter, every part of this planet, every possibility for justice and fairness, every single soul, including our own, that can save us. That is a love worthy of our conversation and our reflection and our devotion. That is the love that our Universalist forebears knew, a love so strong and so sure that it could be relied upon, a love that will not let us go. A love that inspired them to name their congregations All Souls, because they truly, deeply believed that somehow this love would find a way to redeem everyone. They didn't need to know how or when. They just relied upon the strength and possibility of love, and got down to the business of building a better world, a world that reflected the presence of this amazing and powerful love that they believed in. Now, I have to admit, I even resisted preaching about this stronger, bolder, more faithful kind of love for a long time. I guess I was embarrassed to admit that I really do think love is What? Love is the answer? Well, yes. As trite as that sounds, if all of us came to understand that love is something more than a feeling, something even more than a cultural force, but instead something that calls every one of us to invest the best part of ourselves in the work of creating and maintaining healthy relationships at all levels, from the most intimate to the relations among nations. Then, if we believed in that love, we would truly be on the path to saving the world. That is the kind of love and ministry that I long for. I want to tell you one story because it's so often the stories that you remember. This is a story that was told by Rebecca Parker, the president of Starr King Seminary in Berkeley, in her book, Proverbs of Ashes. The day Lyle arrived home from the war, the whole town came out to meet him. When the train pulled into the station, the band played. Family and friends waved and cheered, and the mayor stood ready to greet him. But the man who climbed off that train was not the cheerful, high-spirited boy who had gone off to war. The man who climbed off the train was a ghost. In response to the music and the cheers, he stared back mutely. His blank face did not register recognition of anyone, not his mother, not his sister, not his friends. So they took him home to the farm. He sat in a rocker in the parlor. He didn't speak, he didn't sleep, and he would barely eat. No one in the town knew exactly what was wrong. They just knew that Lyle's soul was lost somewhere. Maxine decided to keep her brother Lyle company. Whenever she could, she'd sit in the parlor with him and talk. She'd tell him the news from the hardware store in town, about the potluck at church, who was there, which dress each young woman wore. She'd tell him how the clean laundry had blown off the line and into the tomatoes that morning. When she ran out of things to say, she'd just sit with him quietly, snapping beans or mending socks. Lyle was like a stone. No expression on his face, rocking. It went on like this for days that flowed into weeks and on into months. Then one night, late, after everyone else had gone to bed, Maxine was sitting with Lyle, quietly knitting, when the eyes in Lyle's face filled with tears. Maxine noticed. She got up and put her arms around her brother. Held in his sister's embrace, Lyle began to cry, full force, great gusts of sobbing. And Maxine held him. Then he began to talk. He talked of the noise and the cold, the smoke, the deaths of his buddies. And then he spoke of the camps and the mass graves and the smell. He talked all night. Maxine listened. When the morning light came across the fields, she went to the kitchen and cooked him breakfast. He ate, and then he went out and did the morning chores. Now that simple story is what I think of when I think of the kind of love that I believe can save people's lives and souls. Maxine's love was steadfast. It endured the silence and the pain. It met even the ugliness and damage done by war with the simple, though not easy, act of being present. And it drew Lyle back into himself, into his family, back to the steady rhythms of the farm, which still needed him. It saved his soul. Maxine's love that was strong and stubborn, unwilling to let go and willing to face the hardest truths, that love mattered. That is the love that matters. Love that is worthy of our attention and our study and our resolve. Now, some people have the idea that Unitarian Universalism is an easy religion, that because we don't tell our members to live on faith alone or to affirm doctrines that they don't understand, because we don't enforce strict codes of behavior or preach damnation for sin, people think Unitarian Universalism doesn't ask much of people. I think they're wrong. At best, this is a very demanding faith. It asks us to believe that it matters who we love, it matters what we love, and it matters that we love. It asks us to be present to ourselves, to each other, and to the world with perseverance and patience and understanding. It asks us to listen and to grapple with figuring out what is truly worthy of our love, because what we love will become what matters most to us. And like the deeper truth that's hidden in all those fairy tales, what we love is what we ultimately become. Our faith asks us to become worthy partners to a love so big it can save all souls. A love that doesn't always feel good, but that we know is guiding us towards making justice and peace and reconciliation. A love that doesn't ask us only to be the one who listens, but the one who opens up and tells the long, hard story, the real story of our lives, in all of its pain and its beauty. At its best, Unitarian Universalism asks us to promise ourselves and one another that we will search for love, even when we don't know how or when or how or if we will find it. So, I have come to believe in love. Even if, because it is human beings doing the loving, that love is imperfect. I've come to believe in love that gets angry at injustice, that weeps at destruction, that laughs in delight and notices beauty. I believe in love when love is shoveling the steps, weeding the flower beds, tracking expenditures, asking us to give in order to sustain our community. I believe in that love and its power to heal, its insistence that we act, and its mysterious ability to find us when we are lost and save us. I believe that even though we may sometimes fail, love never fails. And I believe that our congregations, if we are faithful to the call of love, will indeed transform us and transform our communities and the world. I believe in that kind of love. And so as we honor Dr. King and launch these 30 days of love, it is my prayer that more and more of us will come to feel the powerful draw of this strong and stubborn love and give ourselves over to the possibility that together what we love can be saved. I am a firm believer in this amazing love, and it is my hope that together we will begin to embody this love here in our Illinois congregations. Right now, starting this moment, may it be so. May we be the ones that make it so. Amen. Ashe, and blessed be.